You are part of a feminist movement or feminist activists in Russia that are protesting against the war. What does a specifically feminist position against the war in Ukraine mean?
I think we need a little bit context here. In the last 10 years, feminist movement is growing in Russia. I think there are maybe many different reasons why it happens. Maybe Pussy Riot played a role because they made feminism open, discussed, and they made it appear again in a public sphere in Russia. Maybe there are some other reasons, like, for example, in the last 10 years, our government, Russian government, is trying to promote traditional values, which is a very strict norm of a heterosexual family with several children, with an official marriage and a specific way of life, which, of course, not all people agree with this kind of norm. And I think feminism was a kind of reaction to this propaganda of these traditional values. But anyway, in the last 10 years, we have this movement growing. And I would say that feminists were those who were doing many things which actually government should do in the country. I was in this feminist movement for 8 years. For example, we were helping different vulnerable groups. Feminists were opening shelters for the victims of the domestic violence. I, for example, worked in an NGO which helped women prisoners because there are no normal rehabilitation programs for women prisoners in Russia, for women who were in jail and for their families, so, and for their children, for example. So this is all done by the NGOs, by the activists, and many, many other things like this, helping vulnerable people, trying to solve social problems, which we have now. This all was done by the activists, by the NGOs, and also by the feminists. And I would say that when the war started, many feminists, they were devastated because, you know, all we worked on for many, many years with no support from the government and with even not support with the, you know, government tried to stop us doing this. It was putting our activists in jails, you know, like persecuting them and so on. And we still were doing these things. And now with the beginning of the war, this all, we lose all what we did in the last years. Because, of course, the war will bring more poverty. Vulnerable groups will be more hit again by this war inside of Russia, inside of Ukraine, and in, I think, in other countries too. So we felt that the government, Russian government, again destroyed all what we were building for many years. And of course, most of the feminists were against this war from the very beginning. They wanted to do something with this situation, somehow to oppose this decision of Mr. Putin in his circle. So I would say that feminists in Russia, they were against the war from the very beginning. I think that is why feminists were the first oppositional group in Russia, which united against the war and made an anti-war organization inside of Russia with some external coordinators. But most of our participants are now inside of Russia.
Yeah, we have come into contact because you are the spokesperson of a feminist base network that recently published a manifest about their resistance against the war in Ukraine. According to this manifest, there are currently more than 45 feminist organizations operating across the country. What kind of actions are carried out by these feminist groups?
How our movement is structured? We have a coordinating group. The coordinating group has 10 people. Two of them are now arrested. The police raided their houses a couple of days ago, so there are now there are less than 10 members of the coordination group, but we still work. And we have many other groups in different cities of Russia, not only in Moscow or in St. Petersburg, but also like Vladivostok, you know, like Rostov-on-Don, Murmansk, Ulan-Ude, Novosibirsk, many, many different cities in Russia. There are feminist groups with whom we are in contact. And we were in contact even before the war, because there is a network of feminist groups in Russia who contact with each other and collaborate with each other on different questions. What we are doing now, our coordination group, this small core group, proposed different types of action. And we propose that groups in different cities in their own circle decide what action they would like to do. So, and how we propose these actions, we've made a Telegram channel. Telegram is one of the least social media in Russia which was not blocked yet. So in our Telegram channel, we write about our actions, about different things you can do against this war. And then we propose that groups in different cities discuss it with each other and decide in their own circle with those whom they know and with whom they worked for many years. They decide what they can do. And they also can send us some footages or photos of their action, just like documentation that something is happening in this city, something is happening in this city. But what is important is that we're not in touch with all the groups who are involved in our action. And this is done also for their safety, because if, for example, the coordinating group would be destroyed, they wouldn't find our sisters in different cities and towns. Or if one of these groups in different cities would be destroyed by the police, by the special forces and so on, then other groups would be able to continue working or to hide and not to be affected by the persecution. So I'm not sure if I could describe the structure well, but yeah, so we have these groups which I work more or less autonomously, and we have the coordinating group which propose actions. And as for actions, we think that there are two main directions of our movement, of our action today. First of all, going to the streets to protest against this war. We had a big demonstration in Russia yesterday. It took part in 69 cities of Russia. And in many of the cities, there was a women's column. It was not only the demonstration of feminist organizations. There were many other oppositional groups on this demonstration. It was just a big protest of those who are against the war. But feminist groups, they had women columns on this demonstration, so they also took part in this event. We are announced a big event tomorrow, also in different cities of Russia, a mourning event, which means that for Russian citizens, we propose to go to the memorials of the Second World War, because it's a thing which we have in every single city or town in Russia. We propose to go there and to put flowers on this memorial in remembrance of those people who were killed in Ukraine in this war. And to those who are outside of Russia, we propose tomorrow, on the 8th of March, to go to your closest Ukrainian embassy and to lay flowers, again, in remembrance of those Ukrainian people who were killed in this war. So we do these actions on the streets. And we also have a goal, a direction of our work, which is connected with information. Because as you may know, in Russia, propaganda is very strong. And most of the independent media were destroyed since the beginning of the war. They were blocked, they were closed, their journalists had to leave the country and so on. And some social media were also blocked, like Facebook, Twitter. So the channels of information were destroyed, of the independent information, not of propaganda. So what we're trying to do, we're trying to destroy this blockade, this informational blockade, isolation. And this, we propose our feminist group, which participate in our movement, we propose two types of action. First of all, leaflets. We made a design of leaflets and we propose to print them and to distribute them in different cities of Russia. Leaflets with information about people who died in this war in Ukraine, about Russian soldiers who died, because this information is also hidden by Russian government, about the cities which were destroyed and so on. And we also propose to make online campaigning, to spread information online. So these are our main action for now.
So approximately how many people are active in this feminist protest network, and what are the backgrounds of the activists?
So yeah, now I will check. Now we have in our Telegram channel, coordinating Telegram channel, where we post the ideas what different feminist groups can do, we have 16,870 people. It's just like what I saw now today on the 7th of March. So I know some of these people who are in contact with me personally. And I would say that for many years, these people, they were doing different types of activities in their cities. I would say that feminists, they knew very well for many years that they can't really affect politics in Russia. For example, they can't make a party because no oppositional force, no oppositional power in Russia can make a party. It will just be destroyed immediately if somebody will try. So feminists knew that, and they were involved in other types of activities. For example, they were doing community activism, charity, shelters, education, public discussion, blogging, media, this kind of thing. So most of those who are now participating in our movement and whom I know personally, they were doing this kind of things. For example, like I know activists from Kazan who are now involved in our action. And they had a blog in Kazan about feminism, and they were doing educational events, exhibitions about feminism before the war. So this kind of things. And I know some activists from Murmansk. They had a yearly feminist festival in their city. And for example, activists in Krasnodar, they were doing public discussions in their city about gender agenda, right? So they were doing this kind of activities. Some of them, for example, in Novosibirsk, were organizing demonstrations for women's rights. So they also know how to organize this kind of protest. But now they are involved in actions which we proposed them to do.
In the manifest we already mentioned, it says that feminists are one of the few active political forces in Russia today. You were already talking a little bit about it in the beginning of our talk. But I want to ask again more specifically, why do you think the feminist movement is still one of the few active political forces in Russia?
I think it's because, as I mentioned, feminists were not that actively involved in, you know, like big politics. Like they were not trying to make a party. They were not organizing that many protests before this war. And I think that's why they were kind of invisible for the government for a long time. They were seen as kind of just weird, you know, subculture, I would say, which was organizing some local events for like a very small group of people. So government underestimated us. And I would say that in the last couple of years, the Russian authorities, they started seeing feminism as a threat. For example, we had several feminists who were persecuted by the government, like artist Yulia Tsvetkova from Komsomolsk on Amur city. She is now under arrest for... She had a blog about how to see your body in a body positive way, and she was posting there her own drawings, and she was arrested for, she was said that it's a distribution of pornography, you know, and this is up to 6 years in jail. So we have other feminists who were persecuted like this, called foreign agents, and for example, persecuted by the police and so on and so on. But this only in the last 2-3 years. And before, the authorities, they just did not see us as a real power. And I would say this is also about patriarchal way of seeing things, because the authorities, they recognized as a political power, they recognized more people like, you know, Navalny, like men leaders who seemed like a threat for them. But a group of women, especially young women who is doing something not really political, something very local, it was not a threat for them. They saw it just maybe as something funny or stupid, but not a real threat, not real politics. And I think that was a great mistake of our government, because when we were hidden from its attention, we could form a big network of organizations and activists.
So talking about an underestimated but today strong feminist movement, what do you think, how likely is it that there will be a really strong protest movement by feminists or more in general by the civilian population that can influence the further course of the war?
Oh, I don't want to be delusional, and I would say that I'm not sure if we really can influence this war and all these decisions which our government make. But we feel like we have to try, you know, we have to try. And I would say that people go on the streets, and this is a surprise for me, because when I was leaving Russia, it was last year, there was such a political depression. The public sphere was dead. You know, like many independent media were closed, many activists were arrested, and the discussion was kind of dead and people were depressed. Nobody was going to the streets, but now people are going. And for example, yesterday, this big demonstration, there were 5,000 people arrested, more than 5,000 people arrested on these demonstrations in 69 cities. This is information by Over the Info. Over the Info is an organization which helps those who face political persecution in Russia. So they collect this kind of information, and I think I can cite it. So I would say that people are really trying to protest and trying to be heard. But of course, I'm not trying to say that a group of feminists, a group of us can really change things that much. But we feel that we should try. We have to try.
Reading the news, it seems to be so hard to protest against the war because of very strong repressions. And before our interview, you told me that all activists who are in Russia now participate anonymously and do not speak publicly, which is why they allowed you to speak on their behalf since you are in London. But what would you say, how dangerous is it to protest offline and online?
I would say that's very, very dangerous. So for now, we have two feminists from our coordinating group and one feminist from other group with whom we are partners arrested. The police came to their houses, raided the houses, not only the police, the special forces. They were like, you know, with guns and so on. So like our girls are like real criminals. You know, the threat for the society. So they searched their houses and they took them to the temporary detention center. So they are arrested now. And the police made some kind of new case in Russia. It's very strange because it's case for false mining, for the false messages about bombs. You know, it's just really, it sounds really strange for us too. And it sounds like it's not connected with anti-war protest, but actually it is, because on this case, only those activists who participate in anti-war demonstrations and anti-war movement organization, they are arrested. So I think it's a special new criminal case against those who protest war in Ukraine. And they can go to jail for this case. And I also want to say that now we have information, we try to spread it in the media, that a group of our girls, participants of our movement, they were arrested yesterday in Moscow on a demonstration. They were brought to the police station, which is called Bratyeva. It's one of the police stations in Moscow, and they were tortured there, okay? So they were beaten. They say that police put bags on their heads, that police abused them in different ways. And they actually, I know that it may sound strange now, but they are great. They are great activists because they managed to make an audio recording of these tortures, which we try to spread to the different media now. So there is an audio recording of police beating them, yelling at them. And so we have some, not only testimonies, but also this kind of recording. What is terrible in our situation now is that, you know, this symbol Z, which is used by Russian propaganda as a symbol of all this campaign in Ukraine. This symbol was also on Russian vehicles and armor in Ukraine. So this symbol Z is now like swastika, you know, because they put it somehow, I don't know who does it, maybe police or maybe some kind of activists who are pro-Putin, but they put it on the doors of those who are against the war, okay? So we have several of our activists who were marked by this Z symbol. Their apartment doors were marked. So they are in danger, I think. So I would say this is very dangerous to protest in Russia now. You can go to jail, you can be beaten, tortured. That's a dangerous thing, yes.
Yeah, according to German newspapers, it said, well, that was the information of the weekend. A total of almost 10,000 people have probably been arrested so far because they were protesting. And in the Telegram channel of the Feminist Anti-War Resistance, you already mentioned it, it said yesterday evening that only on the protests yesterday, there were more than 2,500 detainees in 49 cities. So yeah, probably by now, the number of people who have been arrested might be higher.
Yeah, this is old numbers because today over the info said that they counted. And today at afternoon, Monday, right? They said that on the demonstration yesterday, there were more than 5,000 people arrested. And all in all, from since the beginning of the war, more than 10,000 people arrested for demonstrations, for any kind of activities against the war.
In this Telegram channel, there was also a message that even reposting war-themed material may be punishable by a fine or even imprisonment. And it is often said that the Russian media is reporting extremely distorted about the war. One of your actions is as well to inform people about what is going on. And what would you say, how difficult is it for the Russian people to inform themselves about what's going on by now?
Yeah, I just wanted to add one thing about the threats for the activists, that there was an announcement by the General Prosecutor Bureau in Russia. They said that those who support Ukraine now will be judged for treason, the betrayal of the homeland, and this is up to 20 years in jail. And also a new law was established in Russia a couple of days ago about fake information about the war in Ukraine. And for this, you can go to jail up to 15 years. Even reposting, even sharing the information is very, very, now it's dangerous. And I would say that it's very difficult for people in Russia to get information. And I would say that I see, for example, my former classmates from my high school in social media, I see some of my old friends, which are not connected with activism, which are not in the opposition. And I see that they are confused. They don't understand what's going on. They just like post things like, we can't believe anyone. We don't understand where to get information. We don't know what is true, what is false about this war. So I would say that the information channels, they're more or less destroyed. But people also don't really believe propaganda, as I understand. I don't have numbers or good data about this, but the propaganda is so crazy and so terribly done nowadays in Russia. So I would say that people don't believe it 100%, but they don't know where to get information. So we try to spread it any possible way.
Yeah, the very strong repressions and the lack of information we were just talking about, it is a really difficult situation to stay active. So I'm wondering what strategies use the activists to continue protesting under these harsh conditions?
So, of course, we're trying to spread information among our activists, how to be safe on the internet, cyber safety, right? Like how to use, what messengers to use to coordinate, because many messengers are checked by the Russian special, not special forces, but, FSB. And we try to spread information that they should not publish their names online, of course, that they should not reveal their identities for now because it's too dangerous for them. So we are trying to stay safe. And if people go on demonstration, many of them try to hide their faces, of course, for example, by the masks, because we still have COVID, even if nobody remembers about it anymore. They try to hide their faces. They try not to be photoed. But I would say that, of course, it's very difficult to stay anonymous and to be safe in this situation. So we do understand that 100% safety we just can't make, we just can't have in this situation.
So under these conditions, what do you think, how will the Russian society, how will the Russian civil society develop further in this situation?
Thank God some other oppositional groups finally started organizing anti-war organizations. I know that a few oppositional groups which are now abroad, they've made an anti-военное действие, anti-war movement organization. There are also some socialist groups like Социалистическая альтернатива, which is socialist alternative, which joined our protest. And there are some independent bloggers who are trying to spread information in YouTube, in Telegram, which are not still blocked, but they may be blocked very soon. But still, there are these are the channels for information. So there are some oppositional groups which are trying to do something in this situation. But I would say that many people from Russian civil society are just shocked, still don't understand what to do, and many of them leave Russia. They leave Russia, they try to hide. They understand that maybe very soon Russia would be closed, the Iron Curtain will appear again. So they are trying to save their families. As for the Russian society, all in all, I would say that people do understand that there will be an economic catastrophe. And I've seen different, you know, photos from people trying to buy anything in IKEA, which will be closed soon in Russia, of people standing in the long lines to the ATM, I think, where you can get the cash from the bank. So people trying to get cash from their bank accounts to buy anything they can buy now. They are trying to make teeth, you know, to repair their teeth at the dentist's. So they are preparing for very difficult times, and many of them trying to save, to prepare for this long, difficult life, and not thinking about protests.
And do you think, like, the difficult times you imagine or you were talking about now, do you think that that might be a catalysator for Russian protests?
To be very honest, I'm not a political scientist to make this kind of prognosis, so I'm not very sure. I'm not sure what will be going on in Russia, in Russian, with Russian protests. But I would say that there was a kind of contract between Putin and people in Russia, as I understand this personally. Okay, it's not an expert opinion, of course. So as I understood this, there was a contract that, you know, Putin's politicians, they steal, they kind of do whatever they want, they sit in their cabinets for years, but still Russian people can have some freedom, some privacy kind of from the state, and just mind their own business. And also there was an idea that we have Putin, we have these terrible authorities, this government, but it's still better than in the 90s when the economy was broken, when there was a catastrophe, when people didn't have jobs, didn't have money, were not paid for years at their workplaces and so on. So still Putin is better than this. But I would say that now this contract, these ideas, they would be destroyed, because what we will have now, many economists say that it would be even worse than the 90s, because, you know, countries' economy is isolated, that central banks' reserves are blocked, a large part of these reserves. So I think there will be disaster, and this idea that Putin is still better than the 90s will just disappear.
So how is it possible to support the feminist protests against the war and the other civil society protests you mentioned before?
So I think that there are many ways to do this, but what we would ask other people to do is not to stop protesting against the war in Ukraine, to continue protesting, to continue going to Russian embassies, to other places where you have demonstrations and different protests against this tragedy and this terrible occupation which Russia launched against its neighbor. And because this affects your governments, and they affect, they make sanctions, they affect Putin's government. And I think this will work in the end somehow. And I also wanted to say that we are okay if other feminist groups or just any other oppositional groups will use our symbolics and our like hashtags in their materials against war. We call on feminists to do this, to join our resistance. And what also can be done, as I told you, on the 8th of March, there will be a big action which we launched in remembrance of dead Ukrainians, of people killed in this war. And we just call on feminists and other people who want to somehow support this action to go to Ukrainian embassies and to lay flowers in remembrance of people who were killed by this occupational war.
What is your message to feminists that will be on the streets on the 8th of March?
the war, any type of war, is destroying all that feminists try to build in this world of good things like equality, you know, supporting vulnerable groups of any kind, you know, all this kind of discussions. It destroys everything which we try to make, you know, and like to grow. And it will affect not only Ukraine or Russia, it will affect other countries too, this war. So I would like just to say that I think that feminism is very important, that feminists should act, should make action against this war, because this is a threat for our movement and for those things which we try to do to establish in the world good things.